tweet at TodaySOR.
Now, litigation can be costly, and sometimes people have no option but to represent themselves in court. Every year, hundreds of lay litigants, particularly people in cases relating to debt, handle their own cases, but they're often at a disadvantage as they attempt to navigate a complex, expensive and time-consuming legal system. Lay litigation is a global phenomenon, but unlike other jurisdictions, Ireland has no court-based programmes to assist lay litigants in handling their cases. Instead, they're often treated as a nuisance rather than a legitimate and accepted part of an accessible and equal justice system. Well, I'm joined now in studio by the Honourable Fearn Fisher, a former New York Supreme Court judge and current law professor at Hofstra University. And Deirdre, not her real name, but who is herself a lay litigant and who has experience of assisting her friends in court. Fearn, if I can start with yourself, there is a great risk, I suppose, attached to somebody representing themselves in court, isn't there? Because, you know, they might know the ins and outs of presenting their case and the rules that have to be, the ground rules that have to be observed.
It is very difficult for someone who's not trained in the law to deal with court rules, which can be very formal, and particularly in Ireland, they're very formal. And so I don't like to use the word risk because risk sounds voluntary. In the case of lay litigants here and in the United States, it's not voluntary. People are representing themselves because they simply cannot either afford legal assistance or they cannot find legal assistance.
Do you think it is a desirable arrangement that people would represent themselves and that it should be facilitated and made easy?
Well, listen, in a perfect world, everybody would have a lawyer. But we are far from a perfect world. So in light of the fact that we do not have enough lawyers for people, that I think that the court system has a moral responsibility to provide services to people who are not represented by attorneys so that they can receive as close to equal justice as we can possibly get.
But there are rules, aren't there, to be followed to process, questioning of witnesses, presenting evidence, and those won't be or can't be set aside simply because one party is a lay litigant.
Well, in the United States, we are beginning to train judges on how to work with unrepresented litigants. Here you call them lay litigants, we call them unrepresented litigants or self-represented litigants in the United States, to ensure that the judge receives the information that the judge needs, one, to make a decision, but number two, to make a fair decision. So we're training judges to ask questions of the litigants, for example, or to assist them in getting evidence into the court record.
Deirdre, tell me about your experience as a lay litigant or an unrepresented one. You represent yourself.
Yeah, the first 15 to 20 times in court were very tough, very stressful.
What were you doing in court 15 or 20 times?
Well, there's a bank looking to repossess my home. And there were adjournments, you know, there was various things going on. So it was sleepless nights, feeling very nervous. And it's like going into battle in a very hostile environment because of the adversarial nature of our legal system. And I felt the legal team for the other side treated me with contempt. At one point, outside a courtroom, the solicitor for the bank towered over me and said to me in an angry and aggressive tone that I must be out of my home in 3 months, you know. And so the emotional connection with my home, where I've lived for the past 34 years, creates an unbelievable stress. And the roof over my head, the place where the home, the safe place where I can rest, restore and recharge for the next day and be productive in society. And to have that stress over it makes it impossible to be that productive person.
Now, we've often reported on this on this programme, Brian O'Connell and before him, Valerie, cases like yours where people literally they were fighting for the roof over their head. And by and large, there seemed to be an understanding on the part of whatever about other solicitors or for the other side that the judge, you know, they would bend over backwards to help the litigants. Was that your experience?
No. One of the first time, I suppose I started going to court to observe, because the thing about, you know, if there's something really tough to do, you know, if there's a challenge you have to get over, well, you have to get over it and go to court and go many times when it's not my own case. And so I started sitting in and observing. And one day I was there and a man stood up alone to was addressed by the judge. And he asked the judge, she said she was going ahead with the case that day for a repossession of his home. She he said, can you give me an hour? I didn't bring my papers with me. I'd like to go home, pick them up and have them here. Can you just allow me an hour? And a judge shouted at him and said, no, absolutely not. And she opened her book of papers, tore out his affidavit out of it and handed it to him. Now, sir, is there anything else you need? You couldn't possibly need anything else. We're going ahead. So I sat in beside him and put a hand on his and said, you know, keep calm. It's all right. Everything will be fine. We'll go through the affidavit. I'll help you. You just take your time. And it's just that calming hand to help people. But I have lots of instances, you know. Let me see.
What about the court system, for instance, Deirdre? You know, the business of lodging paperwork and just getting the formalities in line.
I've seen people going to lodge in the appeals court and they were sent off. I know somebody that asked, they saw met a senior court person and said, look, they won't take my appeal. And he advised, go back in there because only a judge can refuse your appeal. And the answer from the court service staff was, oh, well, we have to manage the numbers. So, in fact, in that case, they are trying to manage the numbers going through the court rather than this person getting justice in the court and a decision by a judge.
Fern, what do you make of that? It seems like the situation, as Deirdre describes it, is far from ideal in this country.
Well, you know, the United States is far from ideal either. However, there is so many new developments in the United States with respect to making the courts accessible to the masses. And, for example, the Conference of Chief Judges, which is each of the states have a chief judge. They get together, they pass resolutions. And just this past summer, the chief judges passed a resolution calling for the use of plain language, as language that everybody can understand, in court forms and court documents, and for the simplification of the court process. And I think that's a major step forward that Ireland might want to consider.
Yes, you're here in Dublin just meeting people to discuss how something might be progressed here along similar lines.
Exactly. Exactly. And we had a fantastic meeting yesterday. Deirdre can tell you some of the groups that were there because, you know, I don't exactly know their names. I don't want to make mistakes, but Deirdre will tell you who was there. But it was a very productive meeting.
Yeah, we had representatives from the Legal Aid Board, from Awalia, was there personal insolvency?
People who would be, I suppose,
working
they wouldn't
in
be able
system.
To afford their own.
And solicitors and a law lecturer, Paul Kenna, who lectures on European law. And that's one issue we really have, that Irish courts are not looking or even allowing us to address European law or our European rights under European directives.
But would you accept, Deirdre, that lay litigants, they can perhaps be more difficult for the judiciary to deal with? They may slow proceedings down because, you know, to a large extent, they mightn't understand what's happening. A bit like putting somebody who can't drive behind the wheel of a car, maybe.
If they have the defences, which they have, but they're not allowed to read them or not allowed to explain them. An example now of one person that I assisted in court, he said to the judge, my 18-year-old daughter wasn't served. That's a court rule that they must serve all occupants over 18. The judge shouted back at him, do you really want to bring your children into this? Now, bear in mind, they're looking to repossess his home. They're looking to throw him and his children out. And I whispered to him quietly, because I am generally a very quiet person, I whispered quietly, it's a court rule. I wanted him to say that, it's a court rule. The judge lambasted me for actually assisting the lay litigant. She was angry, first of all, that he would raise a defence, a correct defence, and secondly, that anybody would assist a lay litigant in court.
Isn't there a device, I think it's called, and it's there nearly 50 years now, from a 1970 case, known as the McKenzie Friend. Can you explain to me what that is?
Well, in UK, there's a program called McKenzie Friends, and those individuals are lay people. They're not lawyers who are able to assist people who have litigation. In the United States, we are developing and have developed, particularly in the state of New York, which is where I'm from, a program called the Navigator Program. And so those individuals, again, are not lawyers who provide not only assistance in filling out forms and finding resources within the courthouse, but also are an emotional support for individuals who are facing very serious issues in their lives. And so the loss of one's home is probably one of the more traumatic events in a person's life. And the people who are defendants in these cases basically sometimes are victims and aren't able to really present their cases because they're afraid. They're traumatized. They're nervous.
Yeah. Does the court service here, Georgia, not have a guide to conducting your own case? It runs to, is it about 30 pages or something like that?
You'd want to be a legal person to understand it.
But it has such a guide, yeah.
There are some guides. I heard yesterday that the court procedures haven't been updated in it's archaic. And that was from a legal person yesterday. So that's unbelievable. And what we were about yesterday was, well, make a change. It's a global phenomenon that people want to represent themselves in family law and as well as home repossessions. Mm-hmm. And so why don't we come into the modern world and accept that that's a reality? Mm-hmm. And why don't we help them? Mm-hmm. And why don't we make the process easier? So everybody, things get sorted more quickly because litigants don't want to be in court. That's the last place they want to be.
Mr. Rockman, may I just say something? That people don't want to represent themselves. They must represent themselves. Either they can't afford an attorney or they don't qualify for the legal, I think here you call it the Legal Aid Bureau.
As
Deirdre said, it is a global phenomenon. All countries are dealing with the fact that there are numbers of lay litigants. Mm-hmm. And it's not a phenomenon that is going to go away because any legal system is unable to address the numbers. In the United States, it's millions of people who cannot afford an attorney or find an attorney.
And Deirdre, with your experience, not just in your own case, but helping others as well, have you perhaps developed an interest in the law that would maybe prompt you to want to actually become a lawyer yourself?
Well, my reading hours are, you know, my reading is about law and reading cases and, you know, updating my knowledge. I'm very interested in European law, how it impacts and how it should be used in Ireland. We joined the European Union. The Lisbon Treaty, the Charter of Fundamental Rights and Freedom, was incorporated into Irish law on the 1st of December 2009. And yet we have judges telling us, do not be raising your EU law in this court. How can that be? You know, we're celebrating 10 years of this. We voted twice for the Lisbon Treaty.
We voted once for it and once against it, I think.
We had to vote twice to get it right. But now, why are we not embracing it? Why are the courts not using it? Why are we not allowed to use our defences under the Charter?
Mm-hmm. And in the cases that you've attended, your own and others, have you had much success? Do you want to tell me about how
I can't discuss my own at all.
Okay.
But it's very difficult and a lot of people feel they need to go to Europe and they're looking to get their cases transferred to Europe.
Okay.
I had a look at the Charter of Fundamental Rights because they're actually celebrating 10 years of the Charter this weekend in Trinity College. Dr. Pori Kenna has an event on there on Saturday. But I've lost my train of thought now.
It's obviously an event that's happening there in Trinity, marking 10 years of the Lisbon Treaty and the rights that it
accords the Charter,
to us.
The Charter is there 10 years, but actually...
Somebody should tell the judges, is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, look, my thanks to you both for coming to studio. It's been great hearing from you, Deirdre, and also my thanks to you, Fern Fisher, former New York Supreme Court judge and current law professor at Hofstra University in New York. Just some more text on this. The ones who slow it down may be an issue in the courts, but the ones who inform themselves about the law or insist it's applied are a bigger threat to the system, says Michael Duffy, who also says that that's by way of a tweet. The law isn't rocket science, the process, however, is.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.